Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
That's
awesome.
Really awesome.
Awesome.
That's, so
that's awesome. Oh, awesome. That's
awesome.
With Stephen Bradford. Stevie B!
Bradford A!
What's going on, dude?
What's up, dude?
Well, we are in the comforts of our own home, not in the comforts of your dirty-ass dressing room.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and we have someone with us today who we've known for a long time.
We have known him for a long, long time.
And GH viewers will remember him.
Yes.
Not most notably, I shouldn't say that. We'll get into what he's notable for. But he came in during a period where everybody came in just as their regular ass names.
That's true. I know.
Hey, meet Dominic.
Yeah.
His character is Dominic.
I know.
Let us reintroduce you to Ronnie.
That's it.
Who played
Ronnie. Ronnie Marmo. What's up, Ronnie Marmo?
Guys, how you doing, fellas? Yeah, that was funny. I said the Goose. I said, you couldn't come up with it like another name? Wait, it's just Ronnie. So that was it.
It's Detective Ronnie.
Detective Ronnie Domestico?
Exactly. Home run. Yeah. Ronnie.
Wow.
Home run. Yeah. Well, because it was also like it was around the Franco time where it was just like let's just be super realistic and just call everybody their names.
Yeah.
Once I came out when I was undercover, you know, and then once I came out as a cop, I went upstairs. I go, hey, Bob, maybe now's the time. You go, oh, that wasn't really his name. He goes, nah, it's still Ronnie, you know?
that's funny because, right, with Dominic, he had an undercover name. He was like, oh, I'll protect my family and the people I love. I'll be a different name. Yeah. Ronnie's like, F him, I don't care.
I didn't get that.
Apparently, Bradford needs some therapy about this. Because it's really bothering him today.
Still on his mind. That's amazing. It's great.
It really is.
It's just a fascinating time.
Cat. That's what it is.
So Ronnie, you had about a four year run? Was it three or four?
And yeah, it was just about exactly 3 years. It was awesome. I did like 150 of them, which is
wow.
Like one a week is the average. And what a blessing. I thought I would just do a handful. So it was great.
Yeah, that's amazing. Cause I remember when you were on the show, there was a few times where you had some pretty juicy monologues.
Yeah.
That you kept, you know, we kept going over and over and over them. Just because I know you've worked outside of daytime, but I know sometimes when people come into daytime, it's a whole nother animal, so to speak.
Yeah, when I first came on, I had a little bit to do, and it was great. But then they all came and saw me do that other Lenny Bruce show I was doing, and it's a 60-page monologue, the show. And then suddenly these monologues were trying I was like, oh, come on. That was the worst thing I did was invite everybody because I was like, you know, just so you know, I rehearsed this for 8 weeks, not 24 hours. You know?
Yeah, right?
The reason I know these lines. So it was a very humbling job. I'm not going to, you know, it was crazy to do all that material and try to keep it together. So,
but isn't it amazing that in not just on General Hospital, but in film and TV in general, if you all of a sudden, people don't assume you have skills, right? They, in the theater, they're like, do this, do this, do this. Cause you're a trained actor. You can do this. In LA, they're like, oh my gosh, can you tell us everything interesting that you can do? And then we'll decide what to put in. They don't assume that we have skills.
You know, I always say about daytime, for me, what it was like an on-camera scene study class that the whole country got to watch 30 days. That's how I explained it. I said, so the days when I was in the parking lot kicking my car saying I suck, I should open a hot dog stand. Or the days I was high-fiving you guys and everybody in the hallway going, I'm a good actor. A month later, they looked exactly the same on TV. It was the weirdest thing.
That is crazy.
Not as good or as bad as I think I am at any time. You know, it's just like it was what it was. It looked I couldn't tell the difference whether I was miserable or good. You know, it was really interesting, humbling.
That is humbling for sure. So, hey man, I know you got into the acting game a little bit later, right? You know, there's some people that you know Steve was, you know, 16, with some 16, with yeah. some girl doing this at 16 years old.
Yeah. Apparently, Bradford's very jealous today.
Wow.
I don't know what's going on. He's a little angry. Have you not, did you not drink yet today?
No, it's not.
Okay,
it's
so
not
that's the problem.
Noon. It's not quite noon on the West Coast.
That's go sit on the couch. Steve and I are going to talk to you about a few things.
Yeah. This guy is going to, Ronnie, I'm telling you, if I see, next time I see him, I'm going to tackle him and punch him.
Oh, please go. Yeah, give him a couple of minutes. No, he's
a little face rearrangement.
That could hurt. You know, hit him in the head with that hat.
Yeah, we don't like the Boston hat, do you, Ronnie?
No. I know. Look at that.
Apparently, no.
I can't wait for us to put a little clip of this video so you can see Ronnie's.
Go, Tori. Reggie Jackson, sign that, and a little hot dog stain. There's a ketchup stain right there.
I love that.
Which came first, the autographs or the ketchup stain?
The ketchup. It was all in the same one.
Oh, okay. Well, it was all the same night?
It was in Fenway. It was one of my greatest nights of my life in Fenway Park. It was incredible.
Oh my gosh.
It was the game right after. Remember when Pedro got thrown to the ground by Don Zimmer?
I think it was the other way around, but yes, I remember that.
Oh, I'm sorry. the next night in Fenway, I went to the game, and wow, what an experience. I ended up meeting these guys. It was a hell of a night. But
wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was. It was one of my favorite nights. And want to laugh? Here's a big funny thing. I was with Brian Austin Green, who's one of my best pals.
Yeah.
And everybody was booing him in the audience because they thought, you ready?
Yeah.
He was Justin Timberlake. I swear to my mother, he had his head shaved the same way. They're like, Justin, you suck. And I go, this is so funny. They think you're Justin Timberlake.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. So when you were, first of all, what kind of kid, where'd you grow up and what kind of kid were you?
I was a horrible teenager. I was just out of my mind. A lot of people don't know this. I dropped out of school after eighth grade. I never went to high school. And I was running the streets like a maniac. And
streets are where?
Streets, well, originally Brooklyn and then Central Jersey in Woodbridge. And then I, at 17, I got sober at 17 years old. That led me 3 years. And then I fell off the wagon because at 20, I was like, there's no way I'm 20 years old. It's ridiculous. Literally, I picked up a drink and that night I was downtown San Diego. I like lost my mind. So now I've been sober 29 years. And so I got sober at 20. So I was a crazy teenager, like insane. And then it wasn't until I was a good kid. I was just really, I had no structure, no guts.
But so at that age, were you thinking, you weren't thinking about the future. You were just thinking about what's happening today.
I'm trying to stay alive. You know, I was, now, the truth is, I was hanging on the street corner with these guys in Jersey, and it was called The Mailbox, and it's because we had a mailbox. Very creative, I know. You know, we'd hang out there, and I was the one guy that would, like, go home and, like, not to get too sappy, but, like, I'd write poetry. Like, I just knew there was something else in me, and I didn't know what it was. I had no concept on what my life would look like.
Yeah.
And then my mother and I used to go see a lot of theater together, and she passed when I was 24. And she used to always say, you should do it. And I'd say, oh, I can't get on stage in front of all those people. And then when she died, I was like, what the hell am I waiting for? And so I auditioned for a local play, and I was 24 years old. And the rest is history. So.
Wow.
So when did you end up coming out to L.A., Ronnie?
I came out January 5th of 99, which was just 20 years ago. And I got my SAG card on 90210, so that was fun. And I remember sitting.
Oh, on 90210, you say?
Yeah, I got my SAG card on that show.
So. That's awesome. Amazing.
Like right when I got here. So I was really blessed. But I came out 20 years ago and I've been doing it ever since. I've been very lucky. So, you know.
But during that time when you came out, because I know you've done a lot of theater and you have a theater, right? That you've always been involved with. You've always, since I've known you, you've been putting up plays forever,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. So tell us a little bit how that came about.
You know, what happened was about 18 years ago, almost 19 now, I was here about a year, and I had booked this great job. It was called Deuces Wild. I don't know if you guys remember the film. It was a big 1950s film. Scorsese produced it. Everybody was famous except for me. Eva Longoria was an extra. She was my girlfriend as an extra in the film.
That's amazing.
Yeah, they walked out with a bunch of beautiful women. They're like, pick one. I was like, I'll take that one. You know,
no kidding.
And then Tyler, which I don't get to, has been like a brother to me for like 25 years before I was an actor. Tyler came on set one day and he just looked at me like cross-eyed, like, who's that? I go, okay, all right. I'll introduce you. And we know how that turned out. But anyway, so I'm doing Deuces Wild and I have this great job. And it's like, it's on Paramount Lot. I couldn't believe it. I'm 26 years old. I'm like, this is the thing. And then honestly, like a week into the shoot, I felt like something was missing. I was like, I'm still like, I got everything I thought would make me happy in Los Angeles. And yet I'm still feeling a little lost in LA. I didn't know what to do. So I called Tyler and I called a few other friends and I was like, I called Eva and a few friends. I was like, you guys want to get together on Monday nights? Let's maybe we could do scene work, keep each other accountable. We can't afford class really. So like, let's just help each other out. And that turned into, you know, doing what I'm doing today, which wasn't the original plan. I wasn't that smart. I just wanted to work with other actors and do something weekly. And that's how this started.
How did you meet Tyler?
Tyler and I met when I was working at the Macaroni Grill in New Jersey. I wasn't an actor yet. And he was with Vanessa. Marcel and Vanessa and I go back 30 years. I know Vanessa. I was her only friend in New York. So anytime she would come to New York and go to the Emmys or whatever early in her GH career, I would go with her to the Emmys. And we became this like just really close friendship at that time. And then I met Ty and fell in love with the guy, you know. And
yeah.
So I know Ty. It's got to be close to 25, 30 years now, something. And still best buddies today. And we talk all the time. And he was an original member of 68. And we ended up doing about 110 productions. We've been open almost 19 years in LA.
Wow.
Last week was our 8-year anniversary in New York. We have a theater in Midtown, in Times Square. And so I'm the artistic director of both. I've been flying back and forth the whole time. And it's really great.
So you're maintaining two theaters now?
Huh? Two theater companies.
Two theater companies, right.
Yeah, so it's cool.
Wow, man.
Yeah, man.
So you did that movie in, you said 2001?
I think so. Deuces, yeah, I think so. Right.
And then after that, did you just like put your head down and work in your theater company? Or, I mean, obviously you probably did some other stuff as well, but like you did that movie and you're like, okay, this isn't everything I dreamed just doing a movie would be. So you do this theater company. How did that growth period, because then we met you, what, 7-8 years later?
Yeah, right.
Well, yeah.
Steve, you probably don't remember, Steve, but I met you back then because I would come with Vanessa to things and Tyler. So I feel like I'd met you 20 years ago, Steve, maybe a little less. But we met in a real way. It's over a decade now.
Yep.
That was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The answer, Bradford, is like there's been a debate my whole career whether the theater company has taken away some of my career or has provided the opportunities that I have gotten.
Sure.
And there's been the debate, and I authentically feel today, it changes as I go along, but today I feel like because of the theater company, it made me a better actor. I provided a home for a lot of people, an artistic home. And you look back at General Hospital, and you know, Bob Guza came one night to see me do Danny in the Deep Blue Sea, because Crystal Kraft directed that play, and there were four right. people in the audience, and he can, you know, talk to me after and said, I've always wanted to write this character, and I think you might be the guy. And so that's one of many examples of like the theater company did kind of help me move along. So I think I don't think I wasted a day at the company, but
some
people think differently actually, but.
but that's amazing. There's so many people, and I don't want to pick on LA too much, but in LA, you know, fulfillment is generally attributed to financial success and material belongings. You know, people don't look at your creative process and go, is your creative process making you happy? Therefore you're successful or whatever. You know, it's people look at it as like, what does your IMDb say? And right. I can imagine someone in LA taking that look at it, but then, you know, somebody that fancies himself a creative person that values not just the work on paper, but the work everywhere would just admire what you did, you know?
I appreciate that. Maurice, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but on the last day of
work, Maurice loves when people talk about him.
Oh, I know. I've had lunch with him outside that.
and you didn't get a word in edgewise.
Oh, geez. Maurice, he kind of walked me to my car on the last day. And he said, money aside, I want to tell you something. I said, what? He goes, I really admire your career and I what you get to do. And he said, I really mean that. Like, I love what you get to do and I appreciate it. And so that meant a lot to me. I mean, I it's the debate. Like, would I rather have his checkbook or would I rather living the artistic life?
Sure.
And I appreciate him saying that. And I believed him. I saw it in his eyes. He's like, I want to do other things too, you know?
Yeah, I mean that, you know, with Maurice, that's a good example. And Bradford and I have talked about this a lot, and this is why we're kind of doing what we're doing with shows on the road, and we're doing the podcast, and we're doing a bunch of creative content, is because sometimes you don't, you know, having the job's great, don't get me wrong, right? It's amazing to have a job for so long that pays well and you can and do what you love to do, but there is some creativeness missing, you know? And even with Mo, he's going off and doing these things and probably not making a lot of money on a lot of them, but it's fulfilling.
Yeah. Right?
And Ronnie, you know, obviously, you know, I admire your persistence. I admire your drive. You never stop since I've known you. You have not quit. I mean, I was on your email list and I'd be getting your emails all the time. I'm like, this dude is doing it. Like you're doing it, man. It's pretty amazing to look at. And we talk about that stuff a lot, about not giving up on your dreams and just always moving forward. And the great thing you have is that creative outlet, which, you know, for me, being on GH was somewhat therapeutic going through the stuff I go through in life also.
Well, I got right back at you guys, because every time I'm like looking at what you guys are doing, you're not sitting home just enjoying the GH. You always got your hand in other things. So thank you for saying that. And I appreciate it. But the same is for you guys. I mean, you got this show, you got other things. You're always like keeping it moving and working. And that's inspiring to me as well. So thank you. You
know? Yeah. So, I mean, but the cool thing is when I see a guy like you, Ronnie, that it motivates me. It inspires me also. And people who are perceived as driven, a lot of people think, oh, that's just the internal motor that keeps going. But we need to be inspired by other people also. And to see your drive and never quitting is very inspiring. So
thank you.
Just want to say that. Go ahead, Brett.
Well, there's this kind of phrase that I've heard for probably, you know, incessantly for the last 5 years, which is make your own stuff. And living in New York, the opportunities that you have on the side when you're not doing like a full-time show, you can do readings, you can do workshops, you can do, but in LA that doesn't necessarily exist as much. And so you've been creating your own work for years before people even started saying in LA, you got to make your own work. And so that's amazing that is, you know, and obviously you have multiple routes to do that. You can produce, you can direct. I don't know if you write. Do you write?
Yeah, I wrote the Lenny Bruce show that I'm doing now.
That was my next question. I thought, because so one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, or Steve, go ahead.
I was just going to say, before we dive in, because it's really interesting, we just need to kind of know how the whole Lenny Bruce thing started.
Right, exactly.
Right. And then Ronnie, what the progression of that was to what it is right now. And I know Bradford has a bunch of questions, because that was one of the reasons he was like, oh, I want to talk to Ronnie about this thing. This is amazing.
Well, because I told Steve, I was like, I want to call Ronnie and ask him all the questions. And I was like, well, hell, we have a podcast. Let's talk about it on the podcast.
Well, Bradford, you know, my phone's on. I'll talk to you anytime.
I know. But it's nice to see your face too.
This is, oh, you too, man. You too. I always love seeing you. It always makes me so happy. I'm proud of you and what you're doing. Yeah, you know, what can I say? I mean, the theater company became a place that I learned how to do everything, and I made a lot of mistakes. Like, I wanted to direct. I don't know how to direct. So I started directing, and I started learning. Now, I don't like when people go, I'm a director, and they just pick a project. I mean, it's kind of like if you're going to be a doctor, you got to go learn how to do that, right?
Sure.
Same idea.
One would hope, yeah.
Well, when you get off the banana boat from Ohio in Hollywood, everybody thinks, oh, I won Prom King. I could go to Hollywood. And now there are problems, you know. So I like when people take it seriously and try to be great at what they're doing. I appreciate that. But I learned how to direct. I learned how to write. I wrote a film called West of Brooklyn, which Natalia Livingston saved my film, because I cast her 3 days into the shoot, had to let somebody go. And if you get a chance, look it up. You can get it on Amazon. It's a wonderful film that I wrote, West of Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And other things. So, but I didn't know how to do that. I just started writing. But I'm happy to talk about Lenny Bruce. I mean, I'm so proud of that and what's been going on with it. It's insane.
Well, it started, I mean, obviously we're going to get to what you're doing now with it, but what was the synthesis of it? Is it just, have you always been fascinated by the guy, or was it handed to you or presented to you as, hey, you should do this? Like, how did it start?
There's a comic named Charlie Brill. I don't know if you guys know him. Charlie Brill, mm-hmm. McCall. They're like 80 now. Their big claim to fame is they were the opening act on Ed Sullivan the night the Beatles came.
And ah.
So And so nobody was listening. They're like, who are these kids with the hair? You know, nobody was listening and everybody, so they walked off stage. They just stopped doing their act. But anyway, Charlie Bill's an old friend and I see him weekly. We have lunch, me and some of these old comics. And one day he goes, you remind me of Lenny Bruce. You know who he was? And I said, I know of him. I don't know much. You know, I love Pryor and Carlin, but I didn't know much about Lenny. But I know he was the, you know, the inspiration for those guys. So he's like, well, somebody wrote a play and they brought it to me. They want me to do it. Why don't you do it and I'll direct it? And I was like, he goes, I'm too old. I don't want to learn those lines. I said, I don't know, man. I said, let me read it. And I read it. I loved it. I was scared. I waited 2 years to do it. Finally, I was like, okay, I'll give it a try. So I did the play. Charlie directed it. We ran for 6 months. It went well. But I always thought I was leaving a lot on the table. I thought there was more. I started to fall in love with Lenny, and I thought there was more to do. So when I got on GH, Guza said to me, this was a couple of years later, Guza said, you know, I'm a theater guy, and I love theater. I'm dying to direct something. And I go, well, I always considered revisiting this material. You want to give it a read? And he did, and that's when Guza directed me in the second version of that.
Ah, okay.
And, got it. And Guza and I went into rehearsal because he wanted to do that. Well, let me just say, I love the play. But what I started to learn about the play was we weren't doing Lenny's material. It was very, and I mean this with love, but once I learned who Lenny was, it was like, it was a very safe version of the play. And I wanted to tell all of it, all the dirt, everything. So I went to the playwright and I said, look, let me try to get the rights to the material. We won't talk about them. I'll do them. Let's show his heroin addiction. Let's show all of that. And he goes, no, my play's written. So I go, okay, I'm going to go write my own. And I said, okay. So I spent 5 years writing it. And after I wrote it, I went to Joe Mantegna with it and asked Joe if he would consider directing because he's my mentor and like my dad. And he just made me do some work on the script. We kept working on it. And then eventually he said yes. And like the difference between that play and this play is that was a very safe, nice version of Lenny, which everyone loved, by the way. The play was great. And I have a lot of love for that play. But my play starts, I'm dead naked on the toilet and it doesn't let up for 90 minutes. Lights up and I'm naked. And it's just like, it's just.
Metaphorically.
Oh. No.
You're buck naked the entire time.
No, not the time. Exactly, you creep. Where's your hands?
You said you were naked for 90 minutes.
No, I said the play doesn't let up for 90 minutes.
Okay, perfect.
No, I'm not naked.
As much as I would love to see you, not naked. Thank you.
Yes, pal, I'm very lonely. Just say. So I wanted to do that play, and I wanted to do the version. So now I tell the whole story. It's like.
Right. So the first one was just like a safe kind of just biopic, if you will, of him. And yours is more of an immersive experience, a Lenny Bruce experience almost.
Oh, yeah. I do the very famous, the infamous N-word bit where Lenny did the N-word. I say,
oh, my gosh.
I mean, I start to play naked. I go through this whole, it's just everything. I mean, we just did an off-Broadway run, 100 performances. And like, wow. I had millennials walking out on me. It was intense. It's I'm very proud of it.
Well, you know, the thing, Ronnie, is Lenny Bruce was very polarizing. I mean, he was obviously a comedian, but he was also an activist,
yes.
You know, and he paid the price a lot of times too, you know.
Yeah, he certainly did for everybody. I mean, he affected poetry, the law.
Yeah.
I mean, the name of my play is I'm Not a Comedian, I'm Lenny Bruce. It says it all right in the title, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Wow. Where off Broadway were you doing? What theater were you at?
We started at a place called The Cutting Room, which is not a traditional theater. It's a music venue.
Right.
It really worked well for Lenny. And then we moved to a place in the East Village called The Box.
Okay.
Really late night, like it's infamous. It's incredible. So I did 100 performances, ran for 9 months. We just closed.
You just closed now?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
Wow. How many seats in that theater, Ronnie?
100.
100. So, okay. Got it.
So I've done 218 performances total, 118 in LA and 100 in New York.
Gosh, dang it, man.
And I'm about to go. I'm signing a deal in the next day. So hopefully this will be signed by the time this airs. I'm signing a deal where we're opening in Chicago in the fall.
Wow.
I'm doing a Chicago run at one of the most prestigious theaters called the Royal George. It's directly across from Steppenwolf and it's 180 seats and it's like a dream. So I'll be there the entire fall in Chicago doing the play. So.
Oh, how amazing is that?
Yeah, I'm excited. I've never been to Chicago. So.
Oh, dude, Chicago's amazing. And in the fall, you're going at the best time. Oh, man, you're going to have an amazing time, dude.
We're opening October 25th, and we're going to run. And then Joe Mantegna is Chicago's favorite son, as you probably know. And he's, you know, he's my director. He's been with me.
Is he going with you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool, dude.
Yeah, it's been, I got to tell you guys, it's been like, it's more than I deserve. You know, it's been such a blessing. So,
and that, growing that through all those different incarnations, that must just be so, I'm sure satisfying the whole way through, but now to have these opportunities to take it, how does that feel? I mean, it's just amazing. It must be so gratifying. Not just like, it must be gratifying creatively, like, wow, this thing that I brought to life, but I don't know, it's got to be a little of that too, you know?
Yeah, you know what the thing is, like a play like this, if it's not done right, it could be very indulgent. And I mean that with the acting, with the directing, even with me thinking it's good. Today, I think I did a good job. I think I need to stop doing it because I think it's such a beast. And the play is so humbling every night that I've never nailed it yet. And I've done 218, I've done this monologue 218 times for an audience. And I'm yet to nail it. And there are three or four times that I thought I did good, I was falling flat on my face. You know, I'm like, oh, I'm good at this, you know? And next thing you know, I'm like, man, I suck. And so to answer your question is, it's like, I think I'm good at what I do, but I also think it's grown beyond what my abilities are. I feel like there's something special going on, not to get too spiritual on you, but Kitty Bruce.
Go there, yeah.
Well, Kitty Bruce feels like her dad is we're walking hand in hand. And Kitty told me it's the best portrayal of her father she's ever seen, including Dustin Hoffman, including the Mrs. Maisel show right now. Wow. She said, nobody got it right but you in 50 years. And so
could you turn this into a movie?
We are working really hard on a couple of options right now. A series, a movie. We've got a few things in the works, and Joe and I have been pitching, and it's very exciting. You know, I kind of found the thing that I want to do. It's like I'm not just going to do Lenny Bruce. You know, I'm not going to turn it into what's his name, Hal Holbrook, Mark Twain.
Oh, right, where that was his thing. Yeah.
Yeah. If I'm, you know, if I'm 80, you guys should probably say, Ronnie, do something else. but I'll be honest, I'm just getting started with this. I found the thing that feels like a vessel for what I do. And talk about therapy, Steve. You said it earlier. This is I can't tell you how I long to get back on stage because it's like 90 minutes of therapy. I need to follow research the deepest corners of my heart. And this play does that. It's like it really is so cathartic, you know, every night. Yeah.
It's here! It's here! The Fab Fit Fun Fall Box is here, Steven.
I know. Fab Fit Fun is a women's lifestyle subscription box filled with full-size premium beauty, lifestyle, fitness, home, and wellness products sent straight to your doorstep each season.
Oh, yeah.
They deliver the season's must-haves. Did you hear that, Bradford? Must-haves?
Must-haves. That means you have to have them.
That you need.
All right. So, dude, so we got the fall box the other day. And first of all, the box itself is stunningly beautiful. My kids end up using it as like put their dolls in. The boxes hang around the house forever.
Dude, who can't use a good box, right?
I mean. Okay, but then, you know, she starts to pull out the stuff, right? So the first thing that comes out is an ultra-soft plush scarf, perfect for fall. And then the PhD resistance.
What was that, dude? You just butchered that.
She pulls out this travel yoga mat from Anthropology.
Nice.
So I feel like I know my wife pretty well, right? But there's no way that I could put something like this together for her. And that's why we got Fab Fit Fun. Her favorite brand is Anthropology. The thing she uses most in the world is a yoga mat. Unbelievable.
That's great.
But the thing is, these boxes are customizable. So maybe you wouldn't want a travel yoga mat, but could use this, I don't know, a ceramic styler instead, or a Kate Spade lunch tote. I mean, you can choose or you can be surprised.
All right. Whatever those things were, you said these boxes retail for $49.99, but always have a value of over $200. And listeners of our show get $10 off their first box with code. That's awesome. Spell it out. That's awesome. At checkout.
Do you want me to spell it out? T-H-A-T-S-A-W-E-S-M-A-B.
No, I don't want you to. That makes your first box $39.99 worth over $200. It's a steal and so much fun.
Yeah, and these box, the fall box will sell out, so make sure to sign up for yours today. And don't forget that coupon code that we spelled out for you. That's awesome, all one word, at checkout for $10 off your first box at fabfitfun.com.
Yeah. So, Ronnie, on just on that, what you were talking about, because you've done so many different performances, right? So, and we know as an actor, usually every performance isn't the same, right? I mean, you have a 90-minute ride to take people on and yourself. And there's some days where you may not feel like doing it.
That happens most days. In fact, Steve, I can't tell you, when it's like 2 minutes to places, I literally always say to the stage manager, I don't have an Emmy tonight.
Right.
I can't give them this, because I wish you guys can see it, because I truly, again, not to get too hippy dippy, but I give myself over to the audience. I belong to them. And there have been a few nights where a few moments, never a whole show, because I don't believe in giving up a whole performance, but there are nights where my heart goes, no, you're just not going to go there right now. I just don't have that for you. And so now I got to explore a different way.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the truth is, nobody wants to watch acting, and my heart doesn't know I'm acting. And so I do have this weird relationship where I don't know where I begin and Lenny ends. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I have a crazy kind of relationship right now with this piece, that it's like I really do turn myself over to the audience and give them everything I have, whatever that looks like on any given night.
When you're about to, you know, when you're 2 minutes to places, as you say, is it like, I don't have the energy for this, or I'm sure maybe some nights it's that, and other times your body's like, I'm not sure I have the capacity to experience what you need to experience. I'm sure it's both, right?
Yes. I mean, when I go out there, like I said, the play starts and I'm dead naked on the toilet, lights up, and people are like, you can hear people gasp. And so I literally say a little prayer to myself every time I'm on the toilet between sitting there and the lights coming up. And I always say, you know, I say a little something to Lenny, thanking him for the opportunity. I say a little something to my mom. And then the last thing I say is nice and easy, nice and easy. Because when it's nice and easy, it goes well. When I feel angsty or I'm not, I feel like I'm taking whatever I was doing prior to the show into the show, it's not good. It's like 90 minutes I get to go to the moon. You know what I mean?
But how amazing is it now that, I mean, it's a little different what Bradford and I are doing, because we're kind of doing music and comedy shows, right?
Entirely different, yeah.
Well, it is different, but there's a lot of similarities in the fact that obviously it's a live audience.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Right, which is to me is the greatest thing ever, is a live audience. There's nothing that can replace that now that we've been doing this.
Yeah.
Once you feel that, and once you get a bite of that, it's like, it's so addicting it's so addicting to get on, to go on stage, even though there's times where we don't feel, we're like so tired. We're like, I don't know how we're going to do this and entertain people for 90 minutes. What are we going to do? And then, you know, and then they start, and then Bradford starts the show, and it's like, all right, here we go. There's no turning back. But once you feel that energy from the audience, man, it's just so, there's something so intoxicating about it that I'm hooked. I mean, it's like, it's amazing. And this
first, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, Ronnie. And it's only been actually the last couple of years where I've been, and Bradford and I've been talking about it, about doing theater, you know, about like you're saying, what's interesting to me is that you're becoming Lenny in a way that most actors won't be able to do because they haven't lived it for 250 shows.
Right. No, right. No. First of all, if you guys want to do theater, obviously I have a joint, so please come do it with me. Like, that's already done. That's easy. The thing is about this is, like, I remember on the first page of my script, there's a joke, and it's and even the nights I don't, thank you, even the nights I don't feel like doing it, there's a joke, and the joke is, I say I say something about my mother was always walking around with a fly swatter, whacking every fly in sight, and I say. And I said, Mom, why are you always trying to kill the fly? She said, because they carry diseases. And then I say, which really confused me, because my cousin gave three guys the clap and nobody ever hit her with a rolled up noose. and I tell you that just to say that when I get that laugh every night,
yeah,
I drop in. I go, oh, no. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
We're here. And it's that laugh. And when the night, there's been a dozen times I didn't get that laugh. And I went, oh no. You're one of those nights. Oh no.
Right.
But and for, so I get it, Steve. It's addicting. And it's, you know, we're performers. And most comedians are miserable and they're on antidepressants. I mean, that's just the truth.
That's true. You know, that is true.
Mostly miserable people who are like, need that.
But let me ask Bradford before you go on. And now I'm the one asking all the questions because I'm so interested. So Ronnie, so when you have an audience like that that might not respond to certain moments that, you know, 80% of the people or 90% of the people will respond to, if you get an audience that doesn't respond to that, do you feel like at that point you have to do some navigation or tweak anything moving forward?
1,000,000%. The way I see it is, I truly see it as it's like me against the audience every night. Whose cell phone's going off? Who's jerking around? Who's doing, I mean, it's a live experience.
Sure.
And it's a theatrical piece. I mean, this piece is not a comedy show. There's some funny in it, but it's a theatrical piece. And so I keep checking in with myself, the whole show going, just be where they're at. Be where you're at. Don't force anything. Don't push anything. Tonight is perfect. And I keep telling myself that it's perfect because my show's become this crazy, like kind of a cult thing. We've had people see it 12 times, 15 times. I have people in the audience. I was going, this is my fifth. I hear it from backstage. Eighth time. and it's amazing. And I mean, if I could like for a second just name drop, because it's so crazy, the people who've shown up at this play. Tony Bennett came, bought a ticket. Billy Crystal, Patti LuPone.
Wow.
Lewis, Robert Townsend. So many people, Barry Levinson, the great Barry Levinson, and dozens of more people like that. And I don't know these people. They just want to see this Lenny Bruce show. Richard Belzer.
All those guys, Lenny Bruce probably had a huge impact on every one of those people.
Yeah. I was watching CNN one night and, Jon Stewart and David Chappelle were talking about my play on CNN.
Wow. You know? That's amazing, man.
I was like, what?
So one of my questions is kind of piggybacking on what Steve said, when you're not getting a laugh or that expected laugh, what kind of crowd that is. So I guess it's a couple things because, you know, he wasn't always necessarily going for a laugh, right? He was going to affect people and not knowing exactly how your show is structured. When you're taking on that material in the same way, like, are there certain pieces of material where you're like, you want them to feel uncomfortable? And so, and you look for that too. Do you know what I'm saying? And how is that?
1,000,000%.
Right. And how as actors, we're always kind of, we lean into wanting to be liked. Right.
Oh man. It's so pathetic. I'm like an open wound. It's like so pathetic up there. I'm like me, love me, please. I mean, you know, Lenny Bruce said,
but he didn't necessarily feel that way. So how do you manage that?
Well, Lenny was completely vulnerable and he was the first to tell the truth. And he was the first. I mean, he literally said, the reason I got into show business was, look at me, Ma. Like, he was so vulnerable. That's why he got into show business. He wanted his mother to go look at him. And to answer your question, it's so insane. Because I just try to put myself where Lenny is and when I do theater, I often say, if the play is well written, like, get out of the way of the material, let the playwright do the heavy lifting. As an actor, just learn it, be honest, be there, be present, and get out of the way. And it's never been more true than this material, because
interesting.
As a playwright, sometimes I throw a temper tantrum on stage if people aren't laughing at the obvious spots. I'm like, I've literally said to the audience, are you serious? You know how funny that is? I've said that to the audience. And then Joe yells at me backstage. He goes, let them have their own experience. It's not up to you whether they laugh.
Sure.
And, you know, I get in a lot of trouble. I'm always like, but I also, like, 6 minutes into the show, I do the N-word bit. And if you don't know what that is, look it up, because it's intense. I do the N-word about 10 times, and then I offend every race. And then the point is, at the end, he was trying to say, let's take the power out of the words. So sure. A little black kid won't cry today when somebody calls him the N-word in school. It's actually a beautiful bit. But he makes you sit through it to get to the end of it. And that's just one example of how uncomfortable the play is. It's funny. It's tragic. It's heartbreaking. It's it's basically a typical Monday afternoon for me. So you know what I mean? It's like follow me around for an hour, but it's really got everything.
So when you are there times where you will break the fourth wall but still be Lenny? You say sometimes you say to the audience, "Oh, well, you know, that was funny." Well, sometimes you will vary from your script, you will stray from your script in order to have a live moment with the audience.
Well, there's two versions. If you see the play, it's structured in such a way where I take you in and out of what I call the storytelling aspect. But okay. Then many times we're in a nightclub. And whenever right. I'm in a club, I do break the wall.
So okay, yeah.
All night long. I break the wall all night long. I had a moment a couple of weeks ago in New York. It was my 100th performance. And some guy was on his phone. And usually, like, I give my soul. And I I'm working my ass off up there. Like, you cannot,
of course.
You cannot be on your phone. Do not disrespect me like that. And Patti LuPone's infamous for that. But
right.
But the guy's on his phone. And he's doing this. He's doing this. And it got to the point where I look and I see it. And then I go, okay, maybe he's got a kid at home. Like, let me give them 10 seconds on the phone. So I pretend I don't see it. But this guy's scrolling. I go, oh, he's not on my watch. You're on Facebook, whatever he is. And I snapped and I go, put your phone away right now. Don't you ever disrespect. I lost my shit. Right after this bit when I was doing the Kennedy assassination. There's a whole thing about JFK and,
yeah.
And Lenny did it. It's very infamous. And so I did that and then I lost my shit. And so it turns out the guy was a reviewer. And I didn't care. And the whole audience applauded and he left.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I'm so sorry. Like, I cannot give you more of myself than I am right now. You need to respect what's going on here, you know? And so that's the extreme case.
Sure.
And certainly I also can't say how many times I've connected with somebody in the audience and I go sit next to them. I hold their hand for the next 5 minutes of the show. Like,
oh, wow.
I'm completely out of my mind. It was literally like, here I am. Here you are. Let's see what this is tonight. So, of course, it's blocked. Of course, it's structured. Of course, there are times I can't do that.
Sure.
To ruin a rhythm of something. But I know the times I can. And it's really, I'm so blessed, man. I can't believe I get to do this. It's special. I really hope you guys get to see it. I mentioned Chicago to you, but what I didn't mention was 2 weeks ago, I signed a contract with Columbia Artists.
I saw that on Facebook. Yeah, it was awesome, man.
Tour. Which people will think Chicago's part of that, but it's actually not. Chicago's its own leg. And then the national tour is being worked on as we speak, and hopefully that'll go.
So what does that mean, Ronnie? How does that look? What does the national tour look like?
They basically call every venue in the country and they say, do you have an interest in our show? It's the Lenny Bruce show. And this company is really cool. They have like Stomp, they have Chicago, they have some great shows. And so I feel real blessed to be a part of that. And so they call around and see who's interested, and then they start to call me and go, okay, do you want to do Wisconsin? Do you want to do – and then they just start to build a tour, and then I just go out on the road for however long.
That's amazing, dude. How fun is that?
I know. I can't believe it. It's great.
Wow. And so you might play a city for a weekend. You might play it for a week. You might play it for a month, depending on how the theater wants to book you.
That's exactly right. I feel like this show is probably a week in each city. That's my instinct.
Sure.
What's really cool about the show is that it's so easy to travel. All it is a toilet, two chairs, a microphone, and a mic stand, and me.
Dude, that is unbelievable.
And beautiful sound and light design, too. So we will always have to send our lighting plot ahead of time. They'll program it. But I could tech this show in an hour.
Wow.
Ready to go. So I could do it in an alley. It's set up that way. And so Joe and I, the big debate has been, do we travel the toilet or do we get one in each city and make it a fun thing?
Well, when you only have those limited things, right? I mean, your transportation, you can be pretty, you can travel light. But when you're traveling a toilet, that's hard.
Yeah. I think what we said to Joe is like, why don't we try to like get a toilet in every city? He'll sign it. And we'll sign it and then try to auction it off for like the local charity or something, make a thing out of it, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, that's funny.
It would be a good in some ways. But, it's really a blessing. And I just can't believe I'm getting to do it. It's grown beyond what I sat down at my computer to write. I'm decent at what I do, but I didn't expect what was going on.
Right. Like, yeah. And that's, you know, it's when you pour that much work and that much heart into something and it, you know, and it comes to something like this, it's really amazing. We're so happy for you, man.
Yeah, it's so cool to see things just line up, you know. There's times where things just work, and it seems like right now kind of the stars are aligning for you to go out and do this, and it's going to lead to other stuff, which is really amazing, Ronnie.
It already has. I mean, I can't tell you how many incredible casting people have seen the show and then suddenly I'm doing a great guest star on Criminal Minds, or I did a Lethal Weapon, or it's like already, because, you know, as an actor, it's really hard. You guys know, but you guys have been very blessed too. And I know Steve has, you know, gotten to do what you wanted to do all this time, but, you know, it's like hard to show what kind of actor you are when you have, when you're doing roles like Mr. You Forgot Your Pickle. I mean, it's really hard.
Funny. I say that to Bradford every night.
I forget it. I leave it everywhere. It's terrible.
Do you leave your pickle everywhere?
Everywhere.
He does.
Your wife.
He does. Actually, it's just a sweet pickle. It's not even a dill pickle.
But you know what I mean.
But Ronnie, but that's a good point. What you're making is obviously they can't see your depth of an actor if you're just delivering one line. But what's more interesting is it's like the old adage of actors who end up writing or directing their own short film and then getting a deal as a writer director as opposed to an actor, right? Mm-hmm. So now have you seen a difference in the way just the industry looks at you since you wrote it and mm-hmm. you're acting and mm-hmm. you did and you put it up on its feet yourself? Is there a difference in the response or
what people say? Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm getting like, it's really interesting because 2 years ago, I have to tell you guys, General Hospital, when I got to do that for those 3 years, I mean what I'm saying. I'm not just being humble about it. That was the hardest job I've ever had. I never felt like I did a good job there. And I'm not being like, whoa, but it was really hard. I never fully felt comfortable, you know? And I felt like I was always trying to hang on by my like white knuckle. And I was like, I didn't do my best work there. And it's funny how you end up being most popular for the thing you're least proud of, you know. Like, I've done some beautiful performances to four people in my theater, and so you know, it, as far as that goes. But I 2 years ago, if you would have talked to me, most people thought I was just going to be directing and writing. Mm-hmm. I kind of fell out of love with acting. I was like, I kind of felt like, you know, every time I get an audition, I'm getting stressed out. I don't like the anxiety I feel. It just, I forgot I loved it. And then when I wrote Lenny, I went, oh, wait, I love this. And I fell back in love. And so to answer your question, like, I'm directing a lot. I'm directing a play now, actually. And so I'm about to go into rehearsal, if you can believe that. So I love directing, but acting I now love again because I'm doing it for the right reasons.
So Ronnie, where's your theater in L.A.?
It's in North Hollywood. It's called Theater 68. It's on Lankershim and Magnolia, basically.
Okay. And you're putting up a play now, or how many plays do you do a year, or how does that work there?
We have an opening of a show tonight that I'm the executive producer of, me and Joe Mantegna. It's called Self-Injurious Behavior, and it's about autism, and it's a beautiful show. We're opening tonight. Ed Asner will be there tonight because a big piece of the tickets are going to the Ed Asner Family Center for Autism, and the other one is going to Autism Works Now, which is Joe Mantegna's favorite charity. His daughter's autistic. It's a very funny, heartwarming, beautiful play. It's not a big downer, but we open tonight because we're trying to make a difference for autism, and what a better way than through the arts. So we're doing that tonight, and now I'm directing another play, and we're just constantly working on the next thing, you know.
That's cool, man. It's so exciting, dude. So exciting. So where can people find you online and you know, especially your theater? Because obviously we have a lot of people in LA who listen, and obviously it'd be great if they could support, you know.
And a lot of people that live in Chicago and in the nation.
Yes.
So where can people follow along and hear if your show's coming to their town?
I'm not the best at social media, but I will say this. I'm sure you've heard that before. As you guys. But here's the thing. Like, theater68.com, which is RE, theater68. LennyBruceOnStage.com. That's right. My thing, Lenny Bruce on Stage. And then you can just find me with my name on all the things, right?
I have
Facebook, the Instagram.
Yeah, and we'll post all this stuff for you too in our show notes and all that, so that people know how to find you, especially Chicago, because obviously Chicago is a huge ABC town.
Well, I have to tell you guys, like General Hospital fans, and I'm not just saying this, like, God, they still all come out and support my stuff. It's
so
like,
great.
It's so nice.
Yeah. And then we're like first name basis and friends, and they come and go, what are you doing? I want to come see your play. And that's really incredible. And Steve, I need to give you a compliment. I often quote something that you told me once. You probably, it was in passing, and you probably didn't think it meant anything. But I was doing a scene at General Hospital, and I direct a lot. I run two companies where I have 100 artists in my artistic care. And I always quote something you told me, and I always credit you when I do it. Oh. I was doing a scene, and it was with Dahlia Salem. And her and I were doing a scene. And I wanted to, I had heard an interview from Susan Lucci who said, the way you stay on a soap is play chemistry with everybody. If the taxi driver comes up, play like you want to sleep with them, you know? So I had this idea. So Dahlia and I are like, we want to keep this job, you know? Let's dig it. We're having these scenes together. Let's have this little energy between us, you know? And you probably forgot this, Steve, but so her and I got together early that morning and we're rehearsing the scenes. We got it all worked out. We're going to do it, right? We go up on stage and there was this energy. It was good. It was, and one of the directors, I'll remain nameless because we're friends. He said, what are you doing, Ronnie? He goes, you're smart. She's stupid. Do the scene. What's the matter with you? Like, in other words, go back to doing the one note that they wanted me to do always. You know, my job there was to go, Sonny's a jerk. Dominic, smarten up. That was my job, right?
Yeah.
That was my scene. So I threw a little temper tantrum inside, and I did the scene really mad, one note. And then I went downstairs, and we saw you in the hallway, and you said, hey, if they ask you to do a scene a certain way and they need something, you said to me, just find a moment to give them that thing and then do the rest of the scene the way you think is right. And then you've given them their thing and they think you've given them their thing. And you were like, so then you respect both, like you're doing your work. And you know, Steve, that saved me the rest of my career so far, because I can't tell you how many times I'm in a situation where I'm like, give them that moment they want, but then still, it usually works with directors that you think, or you're like, I don't know if this guy knows what's happening, you know?
Right, right.
And it was such a gem, and I hope I'm articulating it properly because it's been really helpful to me. And you told me that. You're like, just give them anything you want and still do the work. And
yeah, I do remember that, Ronnie, because a lot of times, you know, when people come on the show and they're kind of thrown into the fire, and even though you're starting to get your footing, you know, and you're able to perform and you're feeling comfortable, you know, a lot of times I'll see these young people come in and they do a great job, and then they'll get a note that, you know, is, I don't want to say it's arbitrary to their performance, but I'm like, that was a great performance they just gave you. Why are you giving this kid a note when it's just going to, I know it's going to mess them up mentally. It's going to get in their head, and then they're going to do something that's not going to be great or feel comfortable doing because they'll be thinking about the note. So I always try to say, if I see something like that, is just give them 10% of what they want. Right. And that's exactly kind of what you're talking about. Just give them that little something that they want and then work in, you know, what you're doing as an artist that you want to do, you know? So
I wanted you to know, I took a big piece of what you said to me and I've been sharing that for the last.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
And it's been helpful. I mean, I quickly can assess in a scene. Now the director says something, even if I completely disagree, I can quickly look and assess and go, okay, I'm going to do that here. I'm going to give it to him here. And then I'm going to build the rest of the scene. So I make a decision to do it. And then they go, oh yeah. And actually it's better because now it's the rest of the scene has other colors and I get the gem, and now they really see the gem. And
interesting. I like it.
And you gave me that, Steve. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, brother. I want to see this play now.
I know, right?
Like right now.
Like, okay, I'll start it, man. Let me take my
All right. No. Where's the toilet?
Let me bring this into the bathroom. I could do it. I'll invite you guys. There's a chance that I'm going to do one or two. Are you guys in LA? Where are you guys?
Yeah, I'm back in LA, Ronnie.
There's a chance I might do one or two pop-up encore performances at my theater just to say goodbye to LA in the next 30 days. So if I do,
I'll beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Let us know, man.
That's awesome. I'm there, brother. I'm there for sure.
So great.
And then there might be a time where Bradford and I are going to do a two-man show.
Come on, bring it.
So we just got to find the right material, the right mix of stuff.
Dominic and I are still very close, Zamproni. We talked yesterday for an hour.
I'm sorry.
He's not great.
No, I'm kidding, dude.
That's so cool, but he's not. He's a soul. But Tyler and Dom and I are always reading scripts, trying to find something that, if the timing works out, we could do together. So
yeah, that's cool.
I'll keep my eyes open for you guys too, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be awesome, man. Yeah, no, we could do the
new Odd Couple.
That's right. That's right. But you know, it's funny. Once you get into start thinking about once you or connect or reconnect to that part of yourself that wants to do interesting things, you know, sometimes I know for me, I've gotten into the habit of just thinking about, oh, I need to do this for my career. I need to book one of these jobs for my career. And it is completely disassociated from how I feel about myself as an artist. And sometimes that sounds kind of douchey, but you know what I mean?
No, it's not douchey at all. It's the opposite. And Bradford, you're a hell of a talent, man. And I know that you're a theater guy and you are a really talented guy. And I could see how getting into a rhythm of what I used to call General Hospital, which again, I have nothing but love for that place. And if they called today, I would go back, but
sure,
I love it. But it's kind of a factory of sorts and a rhythm. And you can lose your artistry pretty quick if you're not nurturing yourself outside.
Absolutely. And that was one of the things that I, you know, when I left back in 2013, I didn't have established. I didn't have any sort of art, creative I didn't have any habits. I didn't have any routines. I had nothing. And I just kind of went out blind going, okay, I guess I want to do that. I hope I get this without any sort of practice. And after a couple of years of it, I was like, why do I feel so like I've done a couple of things, but boy, do I just feel starved.
It's for balance, you know.
Yeah.
If you depend on some sort of monetary value for your art, you're in big trouble because
absolutely
only 1% get to actually pay their rent doing this. And that's why when actors come to me and they say, hey, should I do this? I say, only if you have to. If you have this sickness that I have, that I have to do it, then yes. But if you don't, maybe you do community theater on the weekends and keep your day gig. And this way you still get to act and play. You don't have to be rich and famous for this to be important. And if you start to label yourself like, if I don't make this money, then you're in trouble. You're asking for, you know, because you'll always be let down. You'll always be disappointed because it's all relative, you know, and you can't attach money to this thing we're doing.
Right. You know? Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, man.
We're so happy for you, buddy, and excited
to follow your travels.
Yeah, I can't wait, dude. This is so cool, dude.
I swear, it's such an honor. Like I'm you both have inspired me so much over the years, and I'm just, you know, onward we go. Maybe we'll get to do something together.
Yeah,
God, I hope so. Be so much fun. All right, buddy. Be well.
Hey, thanks for your time, dude. Appreciate you.
Thank you both.
Get all smooth right. Smooth toilets everywhere you go.
Wow. Well,
that was awesome, man.
So cool to catch up with Ronnie Marmo. So cool.
I know, Ronnie Moo.
Well, it's funny, dude, because we talk about this. We've talked about it before, but and actors, when we're on the road, a lot of people will come up to us and go, oh, I want to be an actor. I always say, you better be willing to do theater for free.
Yeah.
If you want to act. And that's really what Ronnie's done for 20 years.
Well, I mean, he's had great opportunities and great successes. But throughout that, he's maintained an artistic practice of.
It's pretty cool, man. Pretty cool.
That's what I admire because it's, you know, like, you know, some people might look at his IMDb and be like, oh, cool, you did that. Oh, cool, you did that. And that is all cool. But he established a baseline of always having a creative practice, whether it's directing, whether it's creating, whether it's giving other people opportunities.
That's the key too, right there, right?
He's creating. And that was like the center pillar of his artistic existence. And then when you got opportunities to do GH or other great things he's done too, then that's awesome. But it's not necessarily what he needs. You know, maybe he needs it for, you know, for money, but you know, but like when talking about what as an artist and a creative person, he has that and that makes you, when the opportunity comes along to do something that someone might view as prestigious, you're in that practice. So you're ready for that opportunity, you know?
Yeah, it's cool, man. Really cool.
Yeah. So so we have a question today from Michelle Flavel. Our Michelle Flavel.
You're asking me like I know?
I just don't want to. I hate saying people's names wrong.
We're going to call her Michelle Flavor from now on.
Flavor. Michelle Flavor. Michelle, thank you so much for your question. It's funny, and Ronnie mentioned Tyler and a couple people.
So stupid.
But this question, is it weird when you are romantically involved with someone on the show and their significant other is also on the show or a good friend of yours? I don't know how often this has happened, but it made me think of it seeing Laura, Wes, and Kirsten, and she thinks that maybe it happens more than we realize, you're friends with everybody, right? So I'm not sure you've ever played opposite of someone that you've been romantically linked with. I haven't on TV. I've dated, when I was still in theater, I ended up dating a couple people that I was playing opposite of, but never since I've been in film and TV have I played opposite someone that I'm involved with.
Yeah, nor have I. So, yeah.
But anyone that I have been romantically involved with generally has someone in their life and, obviously, I mean, it happened with me and Kirsten and Brandon.
Right.
You know, that was right as they were starting their exciting life, you know, getting married and having Harper.
Yeah.
I was still paired with her. And so, yeah, that was weird.
Was it kind of weird?
Well, I remember my kids even saying, like, I remember Kira telling me, they're like, why is dad kissing Harper's mom?
Why are they watching?
Well, they saw like a clip of, yeah, I know, but you know what I mean? Like that is a very weird.
Sure it is. That's just the weird thing in general, right? Especially if you have kids totally. And they say, hey, why is dad kissing that other girl?
Right.
That's weird. Right. I mean, just that's weird. But then if it's, hey, why is he kissing our friend?
Right, exactly, right. It's not just some rando. It's someone you know, right.
Totally. Yeah. So it's interesting because people ask this question a lot with Laura and I about her and Wes and Kirsten.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, and she was like, hey, I'm an actor. She's an actor.
Right.
And I want him to go do the best work he can do.
Anybody ever ask Wes, is it weird to see Laura kissing Maurice?
Or I don't know.
Is it generally from the lens of, hey – well, no, I guess it's.
I think it would be both.
Opportunity, right?
Yeah, yeah. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. So, but look, Wes is an actor. He's been done theater. We've all been acting for so long that it's just not gonna. I don't think it's an issue. You know what I mean?
No,
it's a non-issue because we've done it so much.
Right.
Not that it's normal because it's really not normal at all.
Sure.
But to us, it's our normal. So right. I don't think people really care that much, quite honestly.
Yeah, it is a funny thing. Like, you know, and I know we talked about this before, but you know, whenever there is any sort of romantic thing, when we film it, it always feels so procedural. There's no getting swept up in what you're doing. It's no. Very much like,
and if anything, it's more about shots now than it's ever been, which I've
absolutely
noticed, right? Yeah. Because we don't have a lot of time,
right?
So. And they want to get their shots. And some of them, quite honestly, if I'm directing also a love scene or something that's romantic, you want to get some cool shots. You know what I mean? Like when you had your one love scene. No, but I know we joke about it.
Right.
But there were a lot of candles lit that I know you didn't light.
Right. We were in the candles were more interesting than us, I guess.
Well, if I was a director, that's what I'd be shooting.
They were in the foreground. We were fuzzy in the background.
If I was directing, that's exactly what I would have done too.
Did you assist in that? Were you there? Did you call in? Like,
yeah, it was just like close up on the candles.
Can I assist in this scene? Can I be the?
I said close up on the candle. They're like, Steve, the scene's over already. The jackal's done. I said, okay, cool.
Well, but also, you know, in terms of people that I play, you know, when Emily was on the show, played when Ellie, her husband now, Adir, is a good friend of mine, and so you know, like you always
that's weird.
Yeah, you always think about it, and it is.
I mean, you always don't think about it. Like it's somehow normal in our life, and that itself is weird, but you just get used to it. And everyone that's, you know, most people that are on our show didn't just walk in off the street, so it's normal to them too.
Right. Yeah. So good question, though. Good question. We get it a lot, and I was able to hear Laura answer it, and she was like, hope he does the best he could do.
Yeah. Well, but you know, a lot of times it's framed as, you know, how does your significant other feel about you making out with somebody else versus like, hey, is it weird, you know, when you're all kind of connected? And
well, it's all weird anyway, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's all weird.
But thanks for the question.
Yeah, it was a great question. Michelle Flavor in the house.
Michelle got some flavor. Thanks for giving us some flavor, Michelle Flaville. Flavel.
I love it.
Your name is awesome. Thank you for giving us pleasing things to say.
You're so stupid.
But thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you, Ronnie. Make sure you check out Ronnie. At all the websites that he mentioned. If he's coming to your town, surely check it out. If you're listening, make sure you're subscribed wherever you're listening. If you're on iTunes, give us a review. Right, Steve? Wouldn't it be nice to get a review?
Yeah, let's get a nice review. Why not?
Yeah.
I like five-star reviews.
Five-star
review. We're Stone Cold in the Jackal. So what else we got going on, dude? We're talking about January and February already.
Love that. Love it.
Because
2020 is going to be lit.
2020 is going to be fun. But before that, our first stuff coming up is Indy and Cincy in September. So
yeah, only a couple weeks away.
Dude, already?
21st and 22nd of September, Indianapolis and Cincinnati. And then coming up in October, we have Tacoma, Washington on Saturday, October 26th, Portland, Oregon on Sunday, October 27th.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we get a sold-out show in Detroit on November 23rd, and then Nashville, Tennessee, November 24th.
Yeah, buddy.
Links to all the tickets are on our website, stonecoldandthejackal.com. Go to tour dates and appearances, and you'll see them all listed there. We're having a great time with our Facebook supporters on Facebook.
So fun, dude. So fun.
We're going to be making another video for a recorded song next week.
Yes, we are.
So we'll hopefully have that up for our supporters super soon. And then, you know, once we're on the road, that's where some of our most fun content for our supporters comes up when we're on the road. Cause we're sitting around each other thinking of fun things to do.
Yeah, exactly. So not being chauffeurs to our kids in school right now. So
yeah. Yeah. That is fun, but not necessarily, for social media content.
It's not fun at all. All right, buddy.
All right, man. It's been a good one. Dude. Love you too, buddy. Talk to you later.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? You can get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get a TrueCar cash offer.
Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions, get the answers you need, so there's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride.
So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years? If you need a little help, then check out the next 10 on Podcast One. Join Lindsay McCormick, Paola Paulin, and Kate Edwards, three women with wildly different backgrounds, as they talk about personal growth, discuss their careers, and pinpoint key moments where their lives change forever, along with exciting guests like rapper Ja Rule and many more. So set your goals and download new episodes of the next 10 every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.